Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week, our guest will be Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. He's the Mora d'Asra of the Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere, and he is, I think, the only member of the 4,000 Club. The 4,000 Club means he's the most prolific lecturer, Magid Shir, on YUTorah.org. So he's one of the most prolific lecturers of our generation, and you can go to YUTorah.org and see some of his shiurim. Now, here's something interesting. Last week, we had Rav Usher Weiss, the Chassidisha, the Kloisenberger Chassid, the big Dayan from Eretz Yisrael, the Baal Minchas Usher from Eretz Yisrael. We had a Chassidisha Gayan. And we had Rabbi Ari Marburger from Lakewood, one of the brilliant young, you know, Dayanim in America in Choshe Mishpat. But this week, we have the most prolific lecturer of YUTorah.org. And, you know, I pride myself on this station of really having a potpourri of all the Shomrei Torah mitzvahs of the whole world, regardless of color, ethnicity, as long as the halacha is what are the parameters of your life, you're welcome here. So, you know, there's a story. There was this fellow. He's going to, he's traveling one day, it's in the morning, and he's going past the Verrazano Bridge. And he sees somebody, he looks like he's about to jump, a jumper. You know, it's very, unfortunately, it's common. I remember being stuck in traffic on more than one occasion when the bridges closed down because of a jumper. So this guy gets out of his car and he runs over to him and he says to him, excuse me, why are you jumping? He says, life is terrible, you have no idea. He says, but let me try to reason with you. Let me talk to you. First of all, let's start. He says, what are you? Are you Christian? Are you Muslim? He says, I'm Jewish. He says, oh, you're Jewish. He says, and are you Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Reconstructionist? He says, no, I'm Orthodox. He says, oh, Orthodox. He says, are you Modern Orthodox, Hasidish Orthodox, or Litvish Orthodox? So this guy says, I'm Litvish Orthodox. He says, oh, Litvish Orthodox, that's wonderful. He says, are you Litvish, like Eretz Yisrael Litvish, Israel Litvish, or America Litvish? He says, no, I went to yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, I'm Eretz Yisrael. He says, oh, Eretz Yisrael. He says, B'nai Brak Eretz Yisrael Litvish, or Yerushalayim Eretz Yisrael Litvish? He says, no, Yerushalayim. He says, Yerushalayim like Mir, like Rabbi Shlaim Aibach, or maybe like Rabbi... Or Brisk. He says, no, Brisk. Or he says, Brisk Reb David or Brisk Reb Beryl of Rami Shua today? He says, Brisk of Rami Shua. He says, oh, that's wonderful. Me too. He says, Brisk of Rami Shua Hasidish more or more like Gra? He says, a little more Hasidish. He says, really? Apikiris, heretic. And he says, and I pushed him off the bridge. So as, you know, as all our brethren know, we are particularly judgmental. And if somebody doesn't fit exactly into what we expect, then we really don't want our kids to be in the same class as them. You know, there are entire communities that give certain schools that give a new name, a new concept to sinas chinam, sinna without a reason. And what is it? It's not based on an avera. It's not based on an impropriety. It's based on they're just different than me. And that's what sinas chinam means. There are silly girls who can't get into schools or boys who get into schools. Why? Because you look a little different. You act a little different. Heaven forbid if my child. And, you know, when we tell our child that person doesn't belong in your class, that girl, because she, what are we really teaching them? We're teaching them to judge people for very trivial. And as parents, we think, oh, we're protecting our children. But, you know, when we teach judgmentalism, what happens in life when we get married and maybe our spouse has a different way of doing something? Well, since we're three, we've been taught to really dislike, look down on, be condescend to somebody who looks different than us. And is that maybe an element in why there is maybe so much acrimony, hatred? We think we're doing a mitzvah. But when the Torah says sinas chinam, it knew what it was talking about. And why is it worth talking about now? Because this is Elul. And you know, one of the acronyms for Elul is Ani l'daydi v'daydi li. I am for my beloved and my beloved is for me. It's a particular time to work on relationships. And probably... and I leave you to my dear listener to disagree, one of the primary dividers of people is judgmentalism. We judge and we judge and we judge. You look like this, you have this type of hat, that type of hat. I want to talk about an interesting thought in this week's parasha before we get on to our guest. We have Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who will be speaking about two topics, family planning and e-cigarettes. I believe we're the first. There hasn't been, to my knowledge, any show on this. There hasn't been a program. There hasn't been even a Dvar Torah on this. And there are many problematic halachas about e-cigarettes. We'll hear this. Do they have to be kosher? Can you have them on Pesach? Can you have them before davening? But before together, I wanted to share with you, I think it's a nice thought. You know, this week it says, you cannot harness together a shoyer and a chamoyer, an ox and a donkey. They can't be harnessed together. Loisachresh b'shoyer v'chamoyer. So it's interesting. Some of the commentaries say, why is that? It's alt klayim. It's just like co-planting. It's changing, you know, creation. You're mixing breeds, etc. Something which is a very relevant topic. And at other times, we'll talk about today when we talk about DNA from different species. But there's a Chaskuni, and the Chaskuni says, he says the shoyer, the ox, chose its cud. An ox has numerous, the bovine species have numerous stomachs, and it chews its cud again and again and again. He says, and the chamoyer, the mule doesn't, the donkey doesn't, so it gets jealous. Here he is, he's chewing and chewing and chewing, and the chamoyer hasn't eaten since breakfast, and he's getting all upset. So he says, it's a type of tsar balechayim, it's causing pain to a creature. Interesting how the Torah was so makbid not to cause anguish to a chamoyer watching the ox, how careful it was in protecting any species, right? So it says, but here's an interesting thought, okay? We know that one of the reasons for eating kosher is because, like the Chinuch says, or the Rambam writes, that these are the type of animals that have in their character a certain elements that we are to aspire to. And non-kosher have in their character, and those elements get transmitted to man, transmogrified to man. For example, a pig is filthy. It will eat anything. You chop up a human, a pig will eat it. In fact, they say that there are killers who used to chop up the people and throw them into the pigs, and that way it was to obliterate the evidence. So there are shellfish. Some of Farshim say they're scavengers. They eat all the decayed off the bottom as catfish. So there is an element, a health element, a character element in kosher. So what is so admirable? What are we supposed to discover, learn from the concept the shoyer is a malagera? The bovine species, they ruminate and they eat their cud so they can chew on it for hours after they've eaten. What does that mean to me? I mean, we don't have seven stomachs. At least, you know, hopefully we don't. Unfortunately, sometimes we feel like we have seven stomachs, but we're not supposed to have seven. You know, we don't have seven stomachs. So what is the concept of malagera? So let me share a thought with you. You know, one of the problems that as humans we struggle with, I once heard somebody say, he said, next to every beautiful husband and wife, next to every beautiful wife, next to every beautiful husband, there's somebody who's tired of being married to them. What does that mean? There's a concept called habituation. What does habituation mean? You know, when you were hungry or thirsty, it was a hot day, and you saw an ice cream, and you were so hot, you had just been walking or taking care or working, whatever it may be. So you run into the store and you buy an ice cream, a little container of ice cream, and the first spoon, mamish ganeden, it tastes like heaven. And the second spoon, and by the time you have the fifth spoon, the only reason you're eating is because we're taught since we're little as Jewish kids, you know, finish your food. So why do we finish the container? Because it's there. But after the first few spoons, let's face it, doesn't taste the same anymore. And that's called habituation. We get used. And where do we see this? Loud noises. I remember one summer, me and my wife, we rented a bungalow. And it was in an area where there, like in the five towns, where the planes come into Kennedy. You could literally look up. It looks like a plane. You could read the underbelly. You could see on the bottom that there's a scratch on the plane where the guy forgot to polish it. So I'm sitting there and I'm on the bungalow, and the first time a plane comes over, I jumped like 20 feet up. And I was sitting with somebody who lives there, and he says, why did you jump? I said, the noise. And he looks at me, he says, what noise? And after you live there, you don't hear anything. Right? And what is that? Because repeated presentation of a stimulus causes a decrease in our reaction. Right? You know, where I live, there are deer all over. Now, if you go in the wild, you go to the Catskills, a deer sees you from 1,000 feet, it just takes off. Where I live, they're used to eating up all the flowers, all the roses, everything you plant, the deer eat up. I mean, you can get within 20 feet of a deer before it runs away. It's got habituated, right? And it's like that in all things. There's something called the hedonic treadmill. When we get used to pleasure, that stimulus wears off, and we keep on needing something greater and greater to get us where we feel aroused by that stimuli. It's the same thing. It says the Lashon Chazal, "Mishiyesh leimana, reitzem asayim." A person says, "You know, if I had, when I was a yeshiva boy, if I had $50, I was the richest guy." And then you say, "Oh, if I had $5,000 in the bank." And then when you reach the 5,000, it sits there, and you say, well, 5,000, I got used to that. Why? So it's the endless treadmill of getting used to people who live in war zones. I mean, imagine if you at home heard a bullet shot. You would call the police. People who live in war zones just get used to it. You know, you go to Israel, sirens coming, and people, you know, just sit there talking. They have a Pepsi. The siren, yeah, we hear siren bombs. You just get used to these things. We'd get desensitized. Now here's something very interesting. There's a in middle of the parsha of wars, which these week's parshas, these week's portions of the Torah is, talks about war. There's a pasuk. It says, "V'nasa lecha rachamim v'richamcha." God will give you the attribute of mercy. He will have mercy on you and give you the attribute of mercy, which seems a little bit. What does that mean? He'll have mercy and give you the attribute of mercy. So the great Arachayim, the great philosopher, he lived around 300 years ago in the Middle East. He said, when a person is at war, they can lose their humanity. And they see suffering, and it doesn't mean anything to them anymore. They've killed. They've been through Afghanistan and Iraq, and they've shot, and it just stops meaning anything. He says, so the Torah gives a promise or a blessing. He says, if you listen to my admonitions and you continually work on character refinement, you will never lose your humanity. Even at times of war, when you see somebody in pain, you see that child who had nothing to do with anything, you should never lose your humanity. In other words, don't become habituated to it. V'nasa lecha rachmim v'richamcha. And when you think of it, what does Mala Geira mean? The cow that again and again keeps on chewing its cud. You ate this 3 hours ago. You had that spoon of ice cream. The pleasure is all gone. It's not new anymore. The sparkle, the lift, the cold, the creaminess, the sugar. Now, and the bovine, the bull, it keeps on chewing it again and again and again for hours. And what does that mean? My wife tells me, amazing saying, she says, happiness is not having what you want. Happiness is wanting what you have. So what does it say? Why is the bull kosher? Because it's a mala gera. It keeps getting satisfaction again and again and again from what it already consumed. It doesn't need a new stimuli. It's had it. You know, there's a study, an amazing study. It was from a psychologist called Brickman. He said lottery winners, right? He said he studied 22 lottery winners. And he said within a relatively short period of time, it did nothing for their happiness anymore. They got used to it. Okay, now I'm rich and that's it. It just meant nothing. But 90 days ago, your job, you were complaining. They just got written. They got used to it. So, you know, and when you see in our society, you know, I recently read that Larry King, who's a celebrity, he just had, he married his seventh wife. The seventh is the charm, I guess, right? We talk about getting, you know, the next one will be better. I need something new. He's trying to be Mekayim Kol Mekadeshvi. He married his seventh wife, something new. I mean, isn't that absurd? Like, what was wrong with the first six? But it's that constant search, the hedonic treadmill. So again, when the Torah says, when the Rambam says, and we're supposed to learn something from the animals, from the kosher animals. What is the Malagir? What could we learn this week's parasha from the Shire? We have to lead an examined life. He keeps on eating again the same food again. What do you have in your life that when you got it, you rejoiced? Was it a child? Was it your wife? Your husband? Was it the new car? Was it that job? Well, let's learn something from the Shire. Let's live the examined life. Let's contemplate for a minute. That moment of happiness, whatever it is, put in your mind, I want to relive it right now. And that is how the Chizkuni says, the Chamoyer is sitting there eating its heart out. It says, what is this Shire? It's always happy. It's always chewing. And I have nothing. He didn't eat anymore. He's just leading an examined life, examining the blessings that were given, the brachas that were given to us, and not getting habituated to them. We have with us Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who's the Mara D'Asra of Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere. And he's one of the most prolific Torah lecturers on YU.org. I believe he's the only member of the 4,000 Club. It could be there's somebody else, but I believe he's the only member. He's bountiful, abundant with Torah, Yerushalayim, and fantastic Maggid Shiur. Welcome, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you very much. Great to be here again.
So, Rabbi Leibowitz, Rabbi Aryeh, let me ask you a question. As a Rav of a young and a burgeoning community, you probably get this Shaila a lot. What financial considerations, if any, may somebody take into consideration when planning a family? There you go.
So the question of finances when it comes to having children and how large of a family to have is one that troubles a lot of families and that a lot of people struggle with. And in order to really answer it properly, clearly a person needs to know each family and what kind of stresses it would cause in their family life and what kind of financial pressures they are under. But to give a basic background to it, it's also important to know what the halachos are of Peruvu, what the different levels of the mitzvah are. The basic mitzvah of having one boy and one girl, which is the opinion of Beis Hillel that we paskin like, and beyond that, that there's still a mitzvah beyond that, but it's not quite as strong a mitzvah. It's also important to realize that the mitzvah is not just to have children, but to raise them and to be able to care for them and to be able to provide for children. And then we can start discussing when financial considerations matter and what kinds of financial considerations matter. But it really has to be taken from the ground level. For instance, there are three basic levels to the mitzvah of Peruvu. There's the absolute chiyuv d'oraisa, which, as I mentioned before, we paskin is to have one son, one daughter, a boy and a girl. That's like the sheet of the Beis Hillel. And we learn from Briyaso Shalolam that when God created the world, he created Adam and Chava, a man and a woman, and that serves as the model of Peruvu. Not like the Beis Shammai understand that two boys would be enough, because Beis Shammai learns from Moshe Rabbeinu that Moshe Rabbeinu was Pirish Miishto. He separated from his wife after having two boys. We assume that it has to be a boy and a girl. And then beyond that, there's still a mitzvah. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us that Beboker Zorah Zarecha L'Erev Al Tanech Yedecha, which means that early on in life, a person should be interested in sowing his seed, but even L'Erev, even in the evening of life, when things are later on in life, Al Tanech Yedecha, a person doesn't give up. You keep on going and you keep on trying to have more children. But that's not quite the same level chiyuv. That's not a Din d'oraisa. The Ramban writes in the Milchamos that that's a midos chasidus, to go and to continue to have more children. And then even beyond that, even once a person has continued the Erev Al Tanech Yedecha, which my Rebbe Rav Shechter understands would be patterned after the mitzvah of Puruvu, is to have one boy, one girl, the mitzvah of L'Erev Al Tanech Yedecha, he understands, would mean one additional boy and one additional girl. But even beyond that, the Gemara says that Ein ben David ba ad sheyichla kol haneshamos shebaguf. That Mashiach doesn't come until all of the neshamos are emptied out of some sort of container up in Shamayim, and therefore every Jewish child that's brought into this world brings us a step closer to Mashiach. So there's great value in having children, in having a lot of children, in having a large family. But you see that the level of chiyuv goes down as one has more children, because it starts as a chiyuv daraisa, then moves on to a derabanan or perhaps a midas chasidus, and then at a certain point shifts into a really nice idea of bringing Mashiach closer, but not something that could be formally labeled a chiyuv. I think most poskim in the initial stages of marriage are much more hesitant to use basic financial considerations as a reason not to have children if a person has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu. But I think later on, after one has fulfilled the mitzvah of puravu, there's more to discuss.
What about delaying children? A couple get married, and it's very common. They're in school. And, you know, the wife is out all hours of the night and day. She's finishing her degree, or he's finishing, or just, you know, they're fearful of having children right away. They don't. Their relationship is still burgeoning. It's new. What about delaying children for 6 months or a year? What would be the opinion? We're not talking about not having. We're talking about delaying. What would be if somebody were to ask you that, Shaila, how would you respond?
Okay, this comes up all the time, and this whole conversation has to be with the very large caveat that it really depends on the couple. But just speaking in very general terms, Rabbi Rav Schechter points out that there's a discussion in the Chazon Ish as to whether delaying a mitzvah would be the same as a bittul mitzvah, meaning is pushing off a mitzvah the same as temporarily ignoring the mitzvah, not doing the mitzvah. And that certainly would play a role over here. But a person also has to take into account the health of the relationship and that a child has to be brought into the world in a home that's functioning properly. Certainly people who suffer from anxiety and go through major changes in their lives, like getting married, usually don't do well with another major change following quickly on the heels of the first major change. So someone who's being medicated or treated for anxiety very often would benefit a great deal by having a little bit of a delay. Now, the cost factor when you're dealing with a couple that's still in school is a little bit more it's a tough cheshbon to make. It's not so simple to say that they're in school so they can't afford to have a child, because the truth is if they're in school, they can't really afford to live either. Someone is supporting them, and it's very difficult to make these cheshbonos on someone else's account. But at the same time, we believe that when a couple gets married, the Shulchan Aruch says this explicitly in Ibn Ezra Siman Aleph, that we get married for the purpose of having children. That should be the goal of marriage. That's the very first words in Ibn Ezra. Chayiv kol adam lisa'isha kidei lifros velirbos. That the purpose of marriage is to have puravu. So one could argue that if a couple is not ready to have children, maybe they're not ready to be married yet either. So people should think about this when they start dating. I often tell my talmidim, they ask me, do you think I'm ready to start dating yet? Am I not ready? So I say, can you picture yourself being a father? So sometimes they'll look at me like I'm crazy. What does being a father have to do with dating? But that should be part of the hashkafa, that when we're looking to get married, there are a lot of wonderful benefits of marriage that are all great and all true about emotional fulfillment and having a connection with another person. All those things are great and true and very valuable in a person's life. But a major part of marriage, and the most major part of marriage, is starting a family.
Rabbi Leibowitz, would you suggest then that somebody who's not ready to have children because, let's say, they find it would be too much interfering with whatever, you know, path they are on life-wise, would be better that they not get married rather than get married and delay having children?
Well, it depends on the situation. But if you're dealing with someone who's not sure if he's ready to start dating, so that should certainly be come into the cheshbon. That if he doesn't think he's going to be able to have a family, so maybe he shouldn't date. Now he may have other struggles and other reasons why he feels he needs to get settled, and he or she feel they want to get settled and they want to be able to move on with their lives. That may outweigh that factor. But it's all a matter of balancing the different factors. What I'm suggesting is that this has to be one of the factors. It shouldn't be ignored as a factor, which it often is. People often
now,
have these
Rabbi
Leibowitz,
the reason to have children right away, would that be because of Zrizin Magdimin L'mitzvahs, because a person should not delay doing a mitzvah? Would that be the primary driver in having children right away?
So it certainly would be a fulfillment of Zrizin Magdimin L'mitzvahs. It may be more than that. It may be not just an issue of zrizus, it may also be an issue of a bittul mitzvah when one delays a mitzvah. It's not so clear from the Chazon Ish that's what he's actually saying, but there is room to make that argument as well. I think the other argument to be made, and it's a lot of times young couples don't realize this, is that when you speak to people who work in fertility treatments, there are a lot of people that struggle with having children, just medically struggle with having children. And most of the fertility doctors that I've spoken to said that one of the major factors in being able to treat effectively is youth. And it's very comforting for people to know that everything works and that they're able to have children, and that if things aren't working, to start the process earlier rather than later. So I think there's a big difference between delaying having children entirely versus having one child and then delaying till you have the next child, where you want to be able to properly care for that one child, and you have the comfort of knowing that at least so far things have been working, and you're ready at least partially being mekayim the mitzvah of puruvu. I think there's a big difference between those two stages in life.
Now, Rabbi Leibowitz, the klal of Zrizin Magdim in LeMitzvahs, that we do a mitzvah as soon as possible, it's an interesting, but there's a Trumas Hadeshen, right, in Reish Samach Tes, that talks about an interesting question. He says, a pidyon haben was supposed to occur on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. So he says, on Shabbos would be difficult to do it in the most preferable way because it's a question when to give the money, with the bracha, etc. So he said, rather than do it on Shabbos in a sort of a haphazard oifen, he says, delay the mitzvah so it will be done behidur for the next day. And based upon this, a lot of paiskim nem on a klal, that even though there's a rule of zrizin magdimin lemitzvahs, but slower is better when the mitzvah at the end will be done in a more mehudur dika way.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, the Magen Avraham argues, and this the Magen Avraham seemingly says, that if a person has a talus, but he doesn't have his tefillin and not his talus. So even though you're supposed to do put on the towels first, he says, but if the mitzvah in front of you is the tefillin, do the tefillin. So you see that slower is not better, and a mitzvah behidura is not necessarily better than doing it right away. But if we accept the Trumas Hadeshen, which was brought in the Mechaber, right? So then, if doing a mitzvah in a more profound and a healthier way is not a contradiction to Zrizin Magdimin LeMitzvahs, would it be room to say, well, if you feel that you can delay a year, but have the child in a way that you prepared for it, etc., that would not even be a bittel of the problem of Zrizin Magdimin LeMitzvahs? It's possible that I heard this question, by the way, from your Rebbe, Rabbi Shechta. I don't remember. I heard this years ago. So if I did, I apologize for taking words out of his mouth. But so I'm basically asking a question that I've heard from somebody. I'd like to see how you'd respond to that.
Yeah, the discussion of what's a more important klal in halacha, whether it's Zrizin Magdimin or Hidur Mitzvah or Mitzvah Min HaMuvchar, is a more important klal, is a fascinating discussion in halacha. For example, Kiddush Levana. It's always best to do Kiddush Levana when a person is coming with a sense of simcha and a sense of comfort from Shabbos. Yet, it's often Motzai Shabbos is not the first possible night for Kiddush Levana. We can do it earlier in the month. So that's also part of that same discussion.
I believe the Moira Ktsiya, the Rabbi Yankov Emden, stels that too in Arachaim Chafei, stels that too to this question. Yeah, exactly on point.
Yeah, so it's a fascinating discussion, the halacha, and I would agree that that's certainly a consideration, that if one could do the mitzvah with greater hidur later on, one has to just be honest with themselves whether the mitzvah of pruvu is actually going to be fulfilled with greater hidur, or if a person is caving to pressures that they're getting, or the sometimes the very subtle pressures from the parents of the young couple saying, you're not ready to have a child, and the couple actually deep down feels that they are ready to have a child. The parents are just nervous that the kids aren't really ready. Is that really a mitzvah that's less bihidura because they don't want to disappoint someone else, some external pressure? Every situation is different. You have to be careful how we define what's called a hidur and what's not called a hidur in the mitzvah.
Okay, so in general, what would be your advice to parents?
To grandparents or parents?
Parents. Let's take a maskana out of this. What would be your halachic opinion as the young person approaching you, and now a couple that has three or four children approaching you, and they say they have financial or other consideration about family planning? What would be your, if you had to put it into two bullet points, how would you say it?
Every situation is different, but the basic approach should be that if it's in my very humble opinion, is that when a young couple who does not yet have children approaches, they should be informed of the great value of having children in Judaism and how important it is to have children, and should be encouraged to want to have at least one child right away. Once they already have a child, we would be less of a pressure, and once they're ready, Mekayim Puravu, much less of a pressure in terms of going forward with the mitzvah.
Okay, we're speaking to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz. You're listening to us on WMCA 570 or on WMCA.com or on NachumSiegel.com. And if you have any questions, you can email us to questions@headlinesbook.com. Rabbi Leibowitz, I'd like to ask you another question, a very current topic, and that is e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to ask you, what is your opinion about e-cigarettes? Do they have any implication, etc.? Are they permitted?
So there are lots of halachic implications relating to e-cigarettes. There, one has to discuss, when, first of all, just for those who maybe don't know what it is, the idea of the e-cigarette, and maybe before I researched it, I had no idea what it means. Maybe I'm assuming ignorance just because I was ignorant on the topic, but it's always better to be clear. Essentially, for people who are addicted to nicotine, it's a smoke-free kind of way of getting a nicotine fix. It's an electronic cigarette. It's an electronic device that you put a liquid formula into, it vaporizes the liquid, and when the person inhales, they're inhaling this vapor that's created from that liquid. It does this electronically, and the person inhales and gets their nicotine fix without any tobacco and without any smoke. So there are several questions that poskim have to deal with, and that is, first of all, is it kosher? Does it need to be kosher? Does the liquid need to be kosher? Is this a food item at all to begin with? Second, if it needs to be kosher, does it need to be kosher lePesach, on Pesach? We also need to discuss if it's a food item, or even if it's not a food item, is this something a person could do before davening in the morning? We're somewhat limited in the activities that we're allowed to do before davening. A person's not supposed to eat a meal or travel before davening. So is a person allowed to smoke an e-cigarette before davening? And also one has to discuss fast days. On a fast day, is a person allowed to have this? It has flavors. They sell bubblegum flavor. They sell all different sorts of flavors of this liquid. And perhaps the most important question is, would this fall under the prohibition of endangering one's life? That this is considered something that's unsafe and therefore usher to do because it's unsafe, just like most of the posts can assume is true about cigarettes, regular conventional cigarettes, where we would assume that it's usher. So really, we'd have to take each shiloh separately. So really, when you ask, what do we say about e-cigarettes, you're really asking five different shilohs. So maybe if you could be more specific about which.
So let's talk about shmartim es nafshei seichem, because to me that's, you know, the largest over. Is it endangering your life? Like how much of a health hazard is it? How does halacha look at the health hazards of e-cigarettes?
So the The research isn't all out there yet, apparently. At least with my minimal looking around, it seems that the research isn't all in yet. So we don't really know. What we do know is that there's no smoke and there's no tobacco. So those risks that are associated with smoke and tobacco are not as big of an issue or an issue at all with e-cigarettes. We also do know that there is nicotine and sometimes a pretty intense dosage of nicotine, and nicotine is a poison. Nicotine is something that's also very unhealthy, but it has a whole different set of problems health-wise that it causes. It's hard to know yet which principles we would apply. Meaning, for example, eating donuts is also not so healthy. A person has a lot of saturated fat in their diet. That's also not so healthy. I don't think anyone would say at this point that it's an issa d'oraisa to eat a donut. I think many people would be very comfortable saying that it's an issa d'oraisa to smoke regular cigarettes. And this would seem to be somewhere in between, and we still have to figure out what exactly, how high the risks are, and is this something that...
Do you believe, Rabbi Leibowitz, that smoking regular cigarettes is an issa d'oraisa?
Yeah.
So, can I ask you a question? You're a Masader Kiddushin, I imagine, on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Would you accept a witness who smokes?
I don't ask the I don't ask that question of the witnesses. To be pasul eidos, I'm not so sure that someone is pasul eidos if he smokes, simply because it's at least a machlokas whether it's an issa d'oraisa, and he could be under the impression that it's heter gamur, even though it's hard to imagine that a person smoking thinks that he's doing a mitzvah or that he's doing anything positive in his life. But there are many, many people that are under the impression. I think it's a mistaken impression, but they're under the impression that they're not doing anything wrong. So if the person is a believing Jew and they don't realize that they're doing something that's usher, I don't think it would possible them le'edus.
So in other words, even if somebody has a din of a mumer ledavar echad betoyes mistakenly,
yeah,
you don't believe that he would be possible le'edus.
Right.
Because a mumr l'davar echad gives him a din l'halach of an apikairis, which would for sure be pasul eidus.
Yeah, well, that's if he knows that he's doing an iser. But a person who thinks that he's not doing an iser and his rebbeim smoke, and that's the, you know, what he assumes is the psak halach that is accepted, so I don't think we can call such a person pasul eidus.
So an e-cigarette, then, in your opinion, would be a safik iser d'oraisa?
The data's not in yet. I don't think we have enough information yet. If it's true what many people claim, that it really helps wean them off of cigarettes, so then maybe that's the best way to go. It could save people from a whole different set of illnesses. Other people claim that it's a terrible thing because it makes smoking so easy. You could smoke without any of the choking, without any of the difficulties that people often have when they start smoking. The experts have to figure out.
Point of that. Okay, so let's talk about the Isser Achila. Could you smoke on a tinus?
So smoking on a tinus is really two issues. First, you have to figure out if it's food, if the e-cigarette, the vapor that one inhales is food. If it does have a din of food, then it would be usser. But then there's a separate issue of just enjoying oneself too much on a tinus. The Ramah writes in Siman Tav Kuf Nun Hey, in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, that on Tisha B'Av a person is supposed to limit all hana'os, b'kol masha efshar. It's where he talks about not sleeping with a pillow and not enjoying as much as he normally would. And the Mishnah Berurah over there quotes that many poskim, I think quotes a Knesset HaGedolah, if I'm not mistaken, say that for that reason one shouldn't smoke afilu b'dalet somos, not just on Tisha B'Av, even on the other fast days. So from that perspective, if one is going to be machmir about smoking in general on a tinus, then this would certainly fit that category. Although the Mishnah Berurah says if a person is addicted, they could even smoke on Tisha B'Av in the afternoon after chatzos. So that's one perspective. In terms of the food part of it. So someone told me that the poskim in Lakewood are machmir because they view it as a food. I know the CRC, I had a correspondence with Rabbi David Cohn from the CRC, and he said that the position of the CRC is that we should view it as a food. I'm not so convinced that that's the case, that this would be called ingesting food. It would seem to...
I mean, would they make a bracha on it, according to the CRC?
Yeah,
do they make a shahakal?
So all of these questions, is it a kashrus-sensitive issue? Would you make a bracha on it? To me, it strikes me much more like a mouthwash that has a flavor. It's not a food. It's not meant to be eaten as a food. It's something that you're taking for some other reason. And it's also, it's not even taken in the derech achila. Person's not, it would be, not only that, if a person were to take a bottle of this liquid and drink it, they could die from it. It's toxic. It can only be taken in small doses in this vaporized form. I asked Rabbi Rav Schechter about this. He said he wasn't that familiar with the technology, but his impression also was that this is not a food and should not be treated as a food. So I'm not convinced that there's a problem with assuming that it's mutter in general. I'm not convinced that it's a kashrus problem, and I'm not convinced that there's a problem with having it on a fast day.
So you would say that kashrus, if there's something in it that is not kosher, would not be an issue. I assume that if it was a question of basa b'chalav, it would be different.
So when you're talking in Isra Hana'a, an Isra Hana'a may be different. Although there is a discussion in Hilchos Yayin Nesach about taking in, absorbing the reyach of Yayin Nesach. And over there, it seems that the Shulchan Aruch is makel with that, even though we're dealing, and Shach points out, even though we're dealing with an Isra Hana over there as well. So it could be that there's room to be makel based on a different principle, and that is that Recha Lav Milsa, that if all the person is imbibing is the Reach of the item, and they're not actually eating the item, that maybe Recha we don't view as being significant. But Pashas is, if it's something that's Asr Bahana, a person should probably avoid that.
Even though the shach that you quote is a stira that in Hilchos Pesach we know on that Recha of Chametz you should be machmeron according to the
Yeah, so there's room to discuss that maybe stam yenam maybe is not Asr Bahana, and again, if we're dealing with Basar B'chol of Midar Raisa, which I don't think is the case in any of these liquids, if we're dealing with Basar B'chol of Midar Raisa, then it would be a problem. But I really don't think that's the case. The ingredients are vegetable glycerin and some type of nicotine that's put in there, distilled water sometimes, but generally speaking, we're not dealing with anything that's basar or chalav.
So what about smoking before davening then?
So smoking before davening may be an entirely different issue. It may not depend on whether it's achila at all. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud talks about eating before davening, and the Gemara seems to identify two separate issues. One issue is lo sochu al adam, that we're not supposed to eat before we're mespalel al damchem, before we daven for ourselves, before we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah. And then there's a separate, and that seems to be about achila, that one is not supposed to eat before davening, but then there's a separate reason not to eat that the Gemara says, va'os liyishlach ta'achar gavecha, that we're sort of disrespecting the Ribono Shel Olam by taking care of our own basic physical needs before we worry about the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's not only about eating, that's about anything that shows that we're just worried about ourselves before we're worried about the Ribono Shel Olam. So any indulgence that a person has before davening would probably be a violation of that. Now the question is, if it's something that's not an indulgence, it's just to make me feel like a mensch, like a daven, meaning I want to get dressed in the morning and tuck my shirt in and look respectful for davening, so that's not called an indulgence that I'm trying to make myself look nice, that's called that I'm trying to look respectful for davening. If a person, let's say, every morning takes a shower and shaves before davening because he wants to look nice to come into shul and daven, so that's not a violation. Rav Schechter thought that if a person takes a shower and shaves every morning, but not on Sundays when he doesn't have work, then he's not going to take a shower and shave in the morning. Then he thought that it's clear that the reason he's showering and shaving is not for davening, that it's for work, for later on. And he thought then it would be a violation, then it would be a problem to do so before davening. But if whatever a person, so my first inclination was that it should be aser, because this is just indulging oneself before davening. But people who are smokers, I'm not a smoker, people who are smokers tell me that they can't, the time they need a cigarette the most is right when they wake up. They mamish can't focus on anything. They can't, they get very uptight. If they're not going to be able to have any kavanah whatsoever in davening. So if they need it to help them daven, again, assuming that the whole enterprise is mutter, which maybe is an assumption, but assuming that the whole thing is mutter, if they needed to help them daven, so then it would probably be permissible.
Okay, so let me go back to something we spoke about before. Somebody who knows that smoking is dangerous, but can't hold themselves back from it. They just say, look, I'm an addict. Mm-hmm. Right? Would you accept such a person for an aid?
So probably, because I think the Shulchan Aruch paskins that in order to be Pasul Eidus, I haven't reviewed the Siman in Chosh Mishpat about Pasul Eidus, but if I'm not mistaken, Shulchan Aruch paskins, based on the Gemara Sanhedrin, that in order for a person to be Pasul Eidus, he has to be in violation of an Isser that Chayv Malkus for. And I'm not sure that one is Chayv Malkus. I don't think one is Chayv Malkus for Nishmartam al Nafshu Seichem. So if there's no Chayv Malkus, one could argue that it wouldn't pass with him Le'edus. Plus, if someone is
but respectfully, Rabbi Leibowitz, when the Shulchan Aruch says that you need Malkus, or you have to be, let's say, a Chashad Lama Moina, right? It's on a single Isser. But when we're talking about somebody doing something repetitively, the Mechaba paskins, that somebody who is repeatedly is over on the same Isser falls under the category of a mummer. In other words, he's considered an apikiris because continued indifference is the equivalent of denial. So somebody who is a smoker, and this is a repeated offense, it doesn't happen one time, the chayr would not at that point be just somebody who's over on a lav, but somebody who falls under the din lahalacha of a mummer. So based on this, a mummer is certainly pasul eidus.
A mummer is certainly pasul eidus. I'm still not convinced, though, because there's a certain onus that's created by the addiction that the person has, and the person is struggling with it, and he's trying to stop. He's not smoking every second. He's doing his best, and or what he thinks is his best, and has not yet been successful. I don't know, especially something that so many people think are under the impression is mutter. I'm not sure that we can passel such a person leidus. I don't know.
Okay, so thank you very much. So let me conclude. You say e-cigarettes would be a suffix of an Issa Darais, I guess, based upon what the research findings are as far as it's a derogatory impact on health.
Right.
As far as eating before davening, you believe it would be mutter.
Mm-hmm.
You don't believe, because you don't see it as a tainug, but something sort of like a necessity, like a glass of water. You don't believe that there would be a problem of kashrus on it, because like you say, if you drank a bottle of this, you'd probably die. So if you can't eat it, how could it be an Isser Achila? When it comes to an Isser Hana, which would be, let's say, using it on Pesach, if it had in it, let's say, grain alcohol, for example, as a possibility, since Isser Hana is much more chamer, that would be much more problematic.
Right, it would seem so, yes.
Well, we're very happy to. I don't believe there's a single, to my knowledge, I haven't seen a single article written on this topic. Maybe I could be wrong, but I haven't seen one yet. So we are certainly, trying to live up to our reputation as headlines here as cutting edge halacha. I would like to thank you very much. We enjoy having you on repeatedly. And you speak with, even though I understand that you're a relatively younger man, certainly younger than me, but you speak with the wisdom and the balance and the care of somebody who could be mamish a zakin of in their 70s.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Okay, be well.
So I'd like to close this show with a thought about the time of year, the season that we're going through, and it's just a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah. And what is the tefillah, what is the prayer most oft repeated during the entire Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? And it is the 13 attributes of mercy, the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim, which are all about forgiveness. And when you think of it, there's a famous acronym It's brought by many of them, you know, the Nisa Kalim on the Shulchan Aruch, that Elul, the month that we're in, stands for Ani L'Doidi, I am for my beloved, V'Doidi Li, and my beloved is for me. And it's understood really on two levels. One is between man and his creator. And additionally, it's also on the simplest level, Ani L'Doidi V'Doidi Li, is about our families, about the people we are close to, that Elul is a time of examining our relationships with those closest to us. Be it our spouse, be it our children. You know, sadly, there's a lot of acrimony. You know, a lot of people don't get along with their wives. I live in a small community. We have a little shul. There's not a lot of people. And you hear about a divorce almost every year or two. Think of the damage it does to the children and to the people themselves. And then people with their children. I was just yesterday on a plane, and a mother and a son sitting next to each other literally were arguing and came to blows. I saw the mother, this is with a boy who must have been in his high teens, hitting the son, and the son started like striking. And just look at it, and you say, you know, people, we have to learn how to get along better. That's what Ani L'Doidi. Let's examine our Ben Adam L'Chaveray. How are we with other people? And certainly those closest to us. You know, there's a Rashi in this week's Sedra, right? It says, Naki Yia Lebeso. So Rashi says, on the Pasuk of Naki, when somebody gets married, the first year, he has to be true to his wife, and he shouldn't travel, etc. He should make an extra effort to build the relationship. So it says, Naki Yia Lebeso, V'simach es ishto. He should rejoice his wife. So there's different commentators. So Rashi, the great, you know, 12th century commentator, writes, V'sima, he says, rejoice not with your wife. He says there are two different ways, not with your wife, but rather make your wife happy. He says, V'yechte ima, he says, it says, V'yechte yas, it's a make your wife happy rather than rejoice with your wife. And he says, somebody who believes it's only rejoice with your wife, Einei Ela Toa, he's making a mistake. Now, I would like to metaphorically tell you an understanding of Rashi. There are two different ways to be happy in a relationship. One is, we are happy together, which sort of means it's a partnership, and you make me happy, I make you happy. And if that doesn't happen, if my wife and me, we're not happy anymore, then I guess it's over. That's one way to look at it. Like, you know, you owe me, I owe you. It's sort of like a merging of a balance sheet. Rashi says, Einei Ela Toya, if you understand this way. But what does it mean? Make your wife happy. To misquote JFK, ask not what your wife can do for you, but ask what can you do for your wife in a relationship. If you can make the other person happy, ultimately it means that's a relationship. That, you know, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to say an interesting story. He would say, the Gemara says that when was their joy by Kfal Yisrael? When was their love? He says the generation where you would have six people who would cover themselves with one blanket. He says when there's love, six people can cover themselves with one blanket. So Reb Chaim asked, he said, how do six people cover themselves with one blanket? It's an impossibility. And Reb Chaim used to say, he said, if everybody wants to cover themselves, there's no way six people could be covered with one blanket. But if everybody wants to make sure that the other person is covered, then six people can be cover themselves with one blanket. And it's a good metaphor for this Rashi. Ask not what your wife can do for you, or your husband can do for you, your spouse can do for you, but ask what can I do for them. So, and Rashi says, if you learn the other way, Einei Ela Toa. So this month of Elul is about relationships, and it's particularly about forgiveness. And what does forgiveness mean? How I was hurt by you. And I forgive you. I want to go to Vanaki. I want to make with this all this hurt. I forgive you totally. I accept that you are human and you can make mistakes. I can go into it. You know, when two people go into a relationship and they really, and they date, and the wife, the girl is wearing makeup, and the boy is wearing his best suit with his new tie, and everybody's on their best. That's wonderful to meet. But really, there has to be an understanding is that you're human, and you're going to have a side of you that's probably pretty ugly. We all do. Now, why is forgiveness so essential? You know, I'm a builder by trade now. I build buildings. That's how I earn a living. I remember sitting with a contractor. We were putting up a 13 or a 14 story building. In New York City, you need to use, you don't use 2x4s anymore. You use like these metal studs. And I'm looking at the metal stud and I asked the contractor, I say to him, how many pounds can this carry? So he looks at it, he says it's rated for 1,400 pounds. And then he says to him, 1,400 pounds, the concrete on this is going to weigh 1,000 tons. How does it carry? I mean, how does this carry the weight? The contractor looks at me and he says, you know, each stud can only carry 1,300 pounds, but when they're trussed together, which means they're part of a structure, there's a top, there's a bottom, there's lattice work, he says, suddenly, something that can only carry 1,300 pounds can carry 1,000 times that weight. Because structurally, they offset the weight, they support each other. When a 2x4 is in a building, in a house, it can carry 1,000 times the weight that it could individually. You know, the Torah, the first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael, first mitzvah is the mitzvah of, and I'm not talking about the Beis Din, because everybody knows a Chodesh Elohim is given to Beis Din, the first moon, is the concept of the family meal. V'yikhu lachem ish, every man should take, selabais avos, a sheep for his house, selabais, for his family house. When, as individuals, we are very vulnerable. Put us in a family structure with a support group, anything is possible. Any setback, any fall, if we have a structure, supporters, you can do it, that when we fall down, they help us up. And when they fall down, we pick them up. Anything is possible. We become like that 2x4 that's carrying 1,000 pounds its weight. So forgiveness, anila daidi v'daidi li, goes to the essence of recreation on Rosh Hashanah. If we forgive and rejoin our family structure and we support each other, v'semach es ishto, we can do anything. Next week, our guest will be the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, one of the Rosh Yeshivas, Reb Nissen Kaplan. He will be speaking about Shalom Bayis. What can you do? What isurim or what mitzvahs can you do to keep Shalom Bayis? Can you miss davening? What is it? What goes in? What sacrifices do we make for Shalom Bayis halachically? He'll also be speaking about going to the hotels for Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, etc. It should be fascinating. He's a fascinating individual. He has thousands and thousands of students here in America of Talmidim. It's an honor. It's the first time he'll be on the radio here in America. Thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. This is Headlines Radio, David Lichtenstein.